The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode contains the topics of death and neglect of a child, suicide, as well as sexual abuse. Listener discretion is advised.
911, what's your emergency?
I called a little bit ago. The deputy sheriff said I found out my granddaughter has been taken. She has been missing for a month. Her mother finally admitted that she's been missed.
Okay, what is here now? Okay, what is the address that you're calling from?
We're talking about a three-year-old little girl. So my daughter finally admitted that the baby's in the store. I need to find her.
Your daughter admitted that the baby is where?
But the babysitter took her months ago that my daughter's been looking for. I told you my daughter was missing for a month. I just found her today, but I can't find my granddaughter. She just admitted to me that she's been trying to find her herself. There's something wrong. I found my daughter's car today, and it smells like there's been a dead body in the damn car.
The trial of Casey Anthony was one of the most captivating, high-profile trials in recent history. From the time the story broke in 2008 to the verdict being read in 2011, viewers were enthralled by each and every detail regarding the death of Casey's two-year-old daughter, Kaylee. The story and its details are both horrific and controversial, with the verdict being, without a doubt, the most controversial aspect of the case. Over the next two episodes, we will comb through the major events and timelines and do our best to keep up with Casey's incessant lies and deception. Welcome to Momicide Podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Kristen.
We are two moms who discuss the world's most intriguing and intricate true crime cases. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like the podcast, please give us a rating, subscribe, and share with your friends and family. Anything and everything helps. So, here we are, episode one. We're starting off strong with the Casey Anthony case. How are you feeling, Kristen?
I'm super excited, and I can't wait to start covering this case. I've been obsessed with it from day one, and it's just a crazy, crazy story.
It is. So, let's just get right into it.
All right.
So, Casey Anthony, she was born on March 19th, 1986 in Warren, Ohio. Casey's parents are George and Cindy Anthony, and she has an older brother named Lee. George, her dad, worked in law enforcement for about 10 years, and Cindy was a registered nurse. From the outside, it really did seem like the Anthonys were a picture-perfect family. Casey's friends described her as bright, friendly, and popular, but in high school, Casey developed a horrible habit of lying, which seemed to begin to escalate with her high school graduation. So in 2004, Casey was in her senior year of high school. With graduation approaching, her mother had a party planned for her, as mothers do, and her family was sending gifts. However, Cindy noticed that Casey had not yet received her cap and gown. But when asked about this, Casey came up with an excuse, and she assured her mom that nothing was wrong. The day before graduation, Cindy received a phone call from Casey's school, informing her that her daughter would not be graduating. It was only then, when her lie couldn't be kept up any longer, that Casey confessed that she had been lying. She had been skipping class and not turning in her work, and she didn't have enough credits to graduate. So as a parent, what would you do in this situation?
Probably scold the hell out of my child and be like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you not in school? Like, what is going on?
Right. And, you know, hold them accountable for their actions.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it might be embarrassing, but you're going to call your family. You're going to return the gifts, cancel the graduation party, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's not what Cindy did. She pretended as though Casey was still graduating and even let Casey's grandparents attend the graduation. When Casey didn't walk across the stage, Cindy explained that there was a mix-up. They didn't send any of the gifts back, and they still had the graduation party.
Which is crazy. Like, can you imagine doing that and knowing that it's, like, nothing you're doing is even true and, like...
Right. It's just...
being so deceptive to... Yeah. For what? To protect your daughter from not being held accountable? Like, I don't know. Weird.
Yeah, it is weird. And I think this story in itself gives a pretty accurate representation of the values and the morals of the Anthony family as a whole. They were very worried about appearances, and it seemed as though they were actually more worried about how people perceived them than who they actually were as people. We're definitely going to hear about many more of Casey's lies as this story goes on. But another significantly large lie that Casey kept from her family and friends was her pregnancy. I think that we're just going to get used to it at this point because she essentially lies every time that she opens her mouth.
She lies about a lot.
Everything. So in the summer of 2005, Casey and her family attended Cindy's brother's wedding. So this would have been Casey's uncle's wedding. At the wedding, multiple family members approached the Anthonys, excitedly saying they had no idea Casey was pregnant and asking when she was due. Family members even said that her belly button was protruding, she was so pregnant. So apparently, George and Cindy were ignorant to the fact that she was pregnant.
Do you actually believe that?
No, and I literally have written here, I don't believe this. But we'll talk about that in a second. So Cindy told the family that Casey was retaining water. And I think to some people, she said that she had a tumor.
Oh my God.
So there's a picture of Casey and her mom at this wedding that you can find on Google. And you can clearly see that her belly is large and round. She has a tiny frame. And she has, like, a little cardigan kind of, like, clipped over. First of all, she has it clipped over her belly, like, at the biggest point.
Yeah, like, you're, like, accentuating it.
Yeah. So, anyway.
She was obviously pregnant.
Yes.
Obviously. And everyone was denying it.
Yeah. So, I'll come back to this. It's, like, do they really think that she isn't? Like, do they really believe her lies? Are they naive enough to believe what she's saying over what is right in front of their faces? And I think it comes back to what I had just said about, you know, maintaining this perfect image.
Yeah.
To the point where it just seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
And speaking of ridiculous, not only did Casey insist that she wasn't pregnant, she even went so far as to say that she was a virgin. She really does take her lies as far as she can. She goes until she doesn't have a leg to stand on.
A virgin with a tumor in her stomach.
Yeah. No, it's just water. She's just retaining water.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, eventually, again, just like the graduation story, when she could no longer keep up the lie, Casey confesses to her parents that she is, in fact, pregnant. Shocker.
Mm.
She was, at that time, about 7 or 8 months pregnant, which... if you don't know this, it's you're at the end of the road.
Yeah.
Like, your baby's coming soon.
There's no way that they didn't know their daughter was pregnant.
They definitely knew. So Casey's friend alleged that she said that she didn't want the baby and she wanted to put her up for adoption, but that Cindy would not allow it. It's also alleged that when George found out, he was elated to become a grandfather. So the identity of Kaylee's biological father remains a mystery to this day. There is a list of men that Casey stated could be the father, and she tended to change her story depending on who she was talking to. Her boyfriend at the time, Jesse Grund, did believe for a short time that he was the father, but Casey and his relationship had begun roughly 2 months after Casey became pregnant, and Jesse knew the math didn't add up. A paternity test later confirmed that he was, in fact, not the father. Maury style.
Yeah.
Casey often told people that Kaylee's father had died in a car accident just before her second birthday.
But which I wonder if that's true.
I don't know. It's never been confirmed. Yeah. So can we believe anything she says?
Like, yeah, conveniently he died, the one that nobody's ever met. Yeah. Like,
anyway, we went from her being the Virgin Mary to having so many men that she's not sure the father is.
A laundry list of men.
Right. So, I mean, we're not even 10 minutes in and we can already tell that we can't trust anything that comes out of her mouth.
Yeah.
So this brings us to her birth. Kaylee Marie Anthony was born on August 9th, 2005. Her and Casey returned to Cindy and George's home in Orlando, Florida to live, where they essentially took on a parenting role. They raised Kaylee and were very protective of her. It's alleged that Cindy would even sometimes call Kaylee her daughter. Jesse Grund, who I mentioned before, who was the father for a little bit but ended up not being the father, he's actually in Kaylee's life for a while, even after he finds out that he isn't the father. His parents often babysat Kaylee. They end up actually getting engaged, and Jesse says at some point her behavior changes, and essentially Casey decides that it isn't working out.
Oh, I didn't know that they were engaged.
Yeah, they were. And so Jesse Grund, on an interview with Dr. Phil, tells Dr. Phil that Casey said it wasn't working because he loved Kaylee more than he loved her.
God forbid.
Yeah, which it's just like,
God forbid somebody loves your child.
Yeah, right. That's not what you want as a mother, right?
No.
Anyway, just so self-absorbed.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so Jesse and his family had been treating both Casey and Kaylee like family. And what does she go and do? She ruins it. She burns the bridge.
She dumps him.
Yeah, she dumps him. And she moves on to, I guess, well, like, not better things, but she moves on. Kaylee was described as a happy, bubbly little girl. Everyone who met her fell in love with her. She had brown hair and big brown eyes. She was a typical two-year-old girl. She loved stuffed animals, baby dolls, and swimming in the family's swimming pool.
And if you've ever seen pictures of her, she's like super, super cute.
Oh, she's so cute. And there are so many pictures that you can go and look at, and it's just heartbreaking. She's just precious. You just, mm-hmm. Yeah, those like big brown eyes, like you can tell she just lit up a room.
Yeah.
Without going into too much detail yet, I'm going to talk a little bit about the days leading up to Kaylee being reported missing. In early June 2008, when Kaylee was just a couple months shy of 3 years old, Casey and Kaylee begin spending many nights at the apartment of Casey's ex-boyfriend, Ricardo Morales, and her friend Amy Huizenga. They're still back and forth to the Anthony home, though, hanging out and swimming. On the morning of June 15th, Father's Day, Cindy takes Kaylee to visit her great-grandfather in an assisted living facility. This is corroborated by video evidence. Later that day, they go swimming in the family pool. Allegedly, there's a family argument at some point this same day where Casey's abilities as a mother are put into question by Cindy. Apparently, this happens a lot.
I was wondering what that argument was over.
Yeah, so
because I know they had the argument and that was like the last time that they saw Kaylee.
Right.
But I never knew that that's what it was over.
Yeah.
She was questioning her ability as a mother.
Yeah, so allegedly she was telling her she was an unfit mother, which I think was not uncommon. It was not an uncommon occurrence in the house. But anyway, it was said that the argument got so heated that at one point Cindy grabbed Casey by the throat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I can imagine there was a lot of tension.
I wonder if she was like, I'll get you back, I'll run off and kill your granddaughter and you'll never see her again, like.
Yeah, you kind of wonder what she said.
Like what the motive was.
Yes, yeah. Great. But I think there was definitely some actions previously on Casey's part, where she just kind of held Kaylee over her mother's head just because she knew how much she loved her and was kind of like in control anyway. It's
awful daughter.
Yep. So the next day, June 16th, George says that he sees Casey and Kaylee leave home with backpacks around lunchtime. Casey tells him that Kaylee is going to the nanny's and that she's headed to work. We'll talk about work later. So George leaves for work a couple of hours later. He had just started a new job, and I think this was his second shift. So that evening, Casey makes several phone calls between 3 and 7 p.m. to her parents and friends. Her calls go unanswered to Cindy, as she was at work at the time as well. Then 1 month later, on July 15th, 2008, Cindy suddenly makes multiple phone calls to police. Between June 16th and July 15th, neither George nor Cindy had seen or spoken to Kaylee, which was extremely out of the ordinary. Over that month, Cindy had been trying incessantly to cross paths with Casey and to see Kaylee. When Cindy finally learns of Casey's whereabouts through her friend Amy, she tracks her down and convinces her to leave and to take her to see Kaylee. While she's in the car with Casey, the first 911 call is made. Cindy is fairly calm and collected. She states that she wants to turn Casey in for stealing both money and her car. We're going to play that clip now.
Hi, I drove to the police department here on Pershing, but you guys are closed. I need to bring someone into the police department. Can you tell me where I can, the closest one I can come into?
What are you trying to accomplish by bringing them to the station?
I have a 22-year-old person that has grand theft sitting in my auto with me.
So the 22-year-old person stole something?
Yes.
Is this a relative?
Yes.
Where did they steal it from?
My car and also money.
Okay, is this your son?
Daughter.
Okay, so your daughter stole money from your car?
No, my car was stolen. We've retrieved it today. We found out where it was at. We retrieved it. I've got that, and I've got affidavit for my banking account. I want to bring her in.
Okay.
I want to press charges.
Where did all of this happen?
Oh, it's been happening.
No, but I need to establish a jurisdiction is what I'm trying to
do. Oh, I lived in Orlando.
Yeah, but what address did these thefts occur at?
I guess my residence, but yeah. It's 49.
Okay. That's actually going to be in the jurisdiction of the sheriff's office, ma'am, not the Orlando Police Department.
All righty.
Let me transfer you over to the communications section for Orange County.
Okay. Now, is the Orlando Sheriff's Department, the one on 436, is that open this afternoon, this evening?
The substation you're at on Pershing, if it's Orlando Police, we're open primarily during the day. But that's not the sheriff. That's the city police, which does not have jurisdiction for your
address. And then there's the sheriff's department on 436.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to transfer you to the sheriff's communication section, and you can determine that. Hold on.
Okay. Because my next thing will be down the trial thing, and we'll have a court order together. If that's what you want to say, we'll do it. And you'll never. Well, then you have. No, I'm not giving you another day. I've given you a month. All right.
So, yeah, that one is interesting because I feel like she's almost just calling to scare Casey.
Yeah, it sounds like more of a threat. And knowing what we know about that family dynamic, it doesn't seem like they ever really held Casey accountable for anything. So the fact that she actually called 911 on her daughter is like a huge move, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's interesting, too, at the end. So at the beginning, she's trying to have her arrested for grand theft, which I'm still confused about because it's Casey's car.
Is it Casey's car?
I think so. I don't know. Maybe if the papers are in Cindy's name or whatever.
Yeah, I think it must be like technically Cindy's car, but Casey was driving it.
Like she always drove it. It was her car.
It sounds to me like Cindy used that as an excuse to like try to get her or Casey into like police custody to get answers.
Right. And just to scare her into saying, you know, Kaylee is here.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that I want to point out is at the end, she's saying, it's fine. I will get a court order to see Kaylee.
Mm-hmm. You can hear her in the background.
And clearly, you can't hear what Casey says, but based on Cindy's response, you can tell that Casey asked for another day. And Cindy says, no, I'm not giving you another day. I've given you a month.
Yeah.
So at this point,
can you imagine like being Cindy and like how fucking suspicious you would be? Like,
I know.
What the hell is going on? Like, where is my granddaughter? Why are you like legitimately hiding her from me? Like,
yeah. And I honestly think that because their relationship was so toxic, I don't think that at this point in time Cindy thought that there was anything wrong with Kaylee.
Right.
I think she just thought that out of spite, mm-hmm. maybe because of the argument that they had,
yeah,
that Casey was just keeping her from her, and yeah. she's like, I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't funny anymore kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
We're going to listen to the second 911 call now. So in the second 911 call, Cindy reiterates her wish to have Casey arrested for theft. And she indicates that she just got the car back from an impound lot, which we'll talk about later. And it had been in the impound lot since June 30th. And this is now July 15th. So for the first time, Cindy indicates that she would like to report Kaylee as missing. So she didn't actually say this in the first phone call, but now she's reporting her as missing, and we can kind of tell that it's escalating a little bit, but
things are getting more serious.
Yeah, but she's still not acting as though someone who really thinks that mm-hmm. their grandchild is missing.
Yeah.
So we'll play this now.
911, what's the address? What's happening? I have someone here that I need to be arrested in my home.
They're there right now?
I have a possible missing child. I have a 3-year-old that's been missing for a month.
A 3-year-old?
Yes.
Have you reported that?
I'm trying to do that now, ma'am.
Okay, what did the person do that you need arrested?
My daughter.
For what?
For stealing an auto and stealing money. I already spoke with someone. They said they would patch me through the Orlando Sheriff's Department, have a deputy here. I was in the car. I was going to drive her to the police station, and no one's open. They said they would bring a deputy to my home when I got home to call them.
So she stole your vehicle?
Yes.
When did she do that?
On the 30th. I just got it back from the impound. I'd like to speak to an officer. Can you have someone come out to my house?
Okay. Okay, I gotta ask you these questions so I can put them in the call, okay?
Okay.
30th of June?
Yes.
Okay, how old is your daughter?
22.
Okay, what's her name?
My name?
Her name.
Her name.
And you said you have this vehicle back?
Yes. And I have the statement.
She's there right now?
Yes, I got her. I finally found her after a month. She's been missing for a month. I found her, but we can't find my granddaughter. 5'1.5".
Thin, medium, or heavy build?
Thin.
Color hair?
Brown.
What color shirt is she wearing?
White.
What color pants?
Oh, they're shorts. They're plaid. They're like pink and teal and white, black, plaid.
Does she have any weapons on her?
No.
Is she not telling you where her daughter is?
Correct.
Okay, we'll have a deputy out to you as soon as one's available, okay?
Thank you.
So I think it still seems like Cindy doesn't understand the seriousness of the situation at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of still feels like she's doing it to threaten her.
Yeah.
And that she's kind of saying, okay, well, I took the first step. That didn't work. Now the second step is to report her missing.
Yeah.
And then for sure, she's going to tell me where she is because she doesn't want to get the police involved. I think she still thinks that there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think she's just too calm to be someone who thinks that their grandchild is in actual danger,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, she does sound, like, irritable on the phone
yeah.
to, like, the 911 operator. I can kind of hear the panic starting to set into her voice.
Yeah.
Like, get an officer here, like, ASAP. This needs to be taken care of kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think in the third 911 call, you really hear that panic.
So, speaking of the third call, when the third call is made, like Kristen just said, it's obvious that Cindy's now extremely upset. And we can tell from the call that Casey has just told her that Kaylee has been kidnapped by the nanny, Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez. Casey also speaks with the operator, and she seems extremely calm and unbothered.
911, what's your emergency?
I called a little bit ago. The deputy sheriff said, I found out my granddaughter has been taken. She has been missing for a month. Her mother finally admitted that she's been missed.
Okay, what is the address that you're calling from?
We're talking about a three-year-old little girl. Well, my daughter finally admitted that the baby's in the store. I need to find her.
Your daughter admitted that the baby is where?
But the babysitter took her a month ago that my daughter's been looking for. I told you my daughter was missing for a month. I just found her today, but I can't find my granddaughter. And she just admitted to me that she's been trying to find her herself. There's something wrong. I found my daughter's car today, and it smells like there's been a dead body in the damn car.
Okay, what is the three-year-old's name?
Kaylee. C-A-Y-L-E-E. Anthony.
Kaylee Anthony?
Yes.
Okay, is she white, black, or Hispanic?
She's white.
How long has she been missing for?
I have not seen her since the 7th of June.
What is her date of birth?
8-9-2000. Oh, God, she's three. She's 2005. So it's Kaylee missing.
Okay, I understand. Can you calm down for me for just a minute? And I need to know what's going on, okay? I'm going to try and talk. Is your daughter there?
I'm on the phone with them.
Is your daughter there?
Yes.
Can I speak with her? Do you mind if I speak with her? Thank you.
I called them 2 hours ago. They haven't gotten here. They finally admitted to the baby. He took her a month ago. He's just trying to find her.
Ma'am.
Okay, Sarah's here. They want to talk to you. Answer the question.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Well, can you tell me what's going on a little bit?
I'm sorry?
Can you tell me a little bit what's going on?
My daughter's been missing for the last 31 days.
And you know who has her?
I know who has her. I've tried to contact her. I actually received a phone call today now from a number that is no longer in service. I did get to speak to my daughter for about a minute.
Okay, did you guys call and report a vehicle stolen?
Yes, my mom did.
Okay, so has been a vehicle stolen too?
No, this was my vehicle.
What vehicle was stolen?
It's a 98 Pontiac Sunfire.
Okay, I have deputies on the way to you right now for that. But now you're three-year-old. Okay, your three-year-old daughter's missing. Kaylee Anthony.
Yes.
White female.
Anthony. Yes, white female.
3 years old, 8-9-2005, her date of birth?
Yes.
And you last saw her a month ago?
31 days. Some 31 days.
Who has her? Do you have a name?
Her name is Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez.
Who is that? Babysitter?
She's been my nanny for about a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Why are you calling now? Why didn't you call 31 days ago?
I've been looking for her and have gone through other resources to try to find her, which was stupid.
Okay. Can you give me the name of the nanny again? Like, spell it out for me.
Zenaida, Z-E-N. A-I-D-A.
Last name?
Fernandez.
Fernandez?
Hyphen Gonzalez. I think the officers are here.
The officers are there?
Yes.
Okay, hold on a second. Don't hang up with me yet. I need you... Okay.
So I think there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. I think the first thing that stands out to me is when Cindy goes to hand the phone to Casey. In the background, she says something along the lines of, I don't have anything to talk to them about.
Like, unbelievable.
It's just, there are really no words.
That 911 call and just hearing the fear in Cindy's voice, like, I can, like, feel her fear.
Yes.
And that terror of like, trying to find your grandchild. Like, it just gives me chills and goosebumps listening to that. And yeah, Casey's whole demeanor on the phone.
It's like, just
not a care in the world. Just like, you know, any other day. Oh, yeah, I haven't seen my daughter in 31 days. Like, right there, you know she's got some involvement.
I know.
Like, normal mothers don't act like that. If I can't find Brady in the house for, like, 10 seconds.
Yes.
Like, if I'm upstairs feeding Cameron or something, and I come down and I can't see him in the living room, my heart starts to, like, beat so fast.
Right.
I, like, start to panic. And that's, like, 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
And, like, you haven't seen your daughter in a month, and
I've been going through other resources to find her, which was stupid.
That makes sense. Yeah, totally.
We'll talk about those other resources later anyway. But
yeah,
I was thinking the same thing. I got the chills just hearing the pain and the fear in Cindy's voice. It's just so heartbreaking. And I think as soon as I heard this 911 call, I just knew right away that Cindy didn't have anything to do with it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You can just tell the way it progresses from her kind of calling because she wants to scare Casey into bringing Kaylee over. And then, like you said, she kind of starts to get a little more nervous to this sheer panic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what had happened was Lee, Casey's older brother, basically went into her room or wherever she was in between the second and third phone calls and said, like, you have to tell us what's going on. I don't know if he was usually someone that she would confide in or not, but she ends up telling him, oh, Zenaida, the babysitter, took her, and either Cindy or George overhear it, and then that's when
she probably knew that she was just backed into a corner at that point, and she had to, like, fess up to something.
Yeah.
Because she knew the cops were on their way, so she's like, okay, like, gotta come up with this babysitter thing.
Just like with the other two lies I had mentioned at the beginning, she will literally keep the lie or the deceit going until she cannot anymore.
Until the bitter end, yeah.
And she could not keep this up anymore. And I think if it wasn't for Cindy tracking her down, surely this would have gone on longer for however much longer, who knows.
During those 31 days, the grandparents, Cindy and George, were trying to get a hold of Casey and schedule a time to see their 2-year-old granddaughter because they missed her. They went from seeing Kaylee on a daily basis to suddenly never seeing her and always trying to track down Casey so they could spend some time with their granddaughter. But all of their efforts led to excuse after excuse as to why they weren't allowed to see Kaylee. Casey repeatedly told her parents that she was too busy on work trips and that Kaylee was with the babysitter, Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez, aka Zanny the Nanny. So there is a real woman who exists with the name Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez, but she has no relation to Casey or Kaylee and has nothing to do with this story apart from the fact that Casey used her identity to lie to the police and say that she was her daughter's babysitter. And this is just one of the many lies that Casey tells throughout this story. Casey is a compulsive liar who is able to easily spin a meticulous web of lies off the top of her head as if it's instinct. She elaborates her lies into great detail to manipulate everyone around her into believing her stories. And this is a textbook sign of a pathological liar.
Yeah, I feel like at this point, it's just not even a surprise because, like we said before, it seems like every single thing that comes out of her mouth is a lie.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable her ability to just make it sound so natural.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
When she, you know, in interviews and things like that, it just.
And the detail.
The detail. Like, details that are literally don't even matter that she adds in.
Like if you find the interrogation tapes on like YouTube or something, you should go and watch them and just listen to her spew out these lies and go on and on and just drag out these details, like, that's how you know someone's lying. It's like, that's not what I asked you. Why are you going off on this tangent about details that don't even matter? But that's what she's doing to try to convince these people that this is real.
Yeah.
And
she's trying to be, in her interrogation, she's like trying to be charming and like funny. It just gives me this weird feeling, like a pit in my stomach. Like, I can't believe. Like,
your child is missing.
And she's just going on and on about this and that. And
yeah. Again, no fear, no panic, no nothing. Just.
It's like, unbelievable. Yeah. The interviews that she does initially with police, it's just, you can tell that they're not buying it. And they also give her a chance. The deputy who interviews her gives her a chance to take back her story or give a different story, and she sticks with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing here. I think she may have been thinking, if I just use a random name of a person, they technically can't prove that this person doesn't exist. Like, my best bet is to make a person up that they can't, you know.
Yeah.
I think we all know that this person doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But she was probably thinking, like, this would be a good thing to do because technically there might be a little doubt in the back of people's minds about whether this person exists or not.
But this person does exist. She just has no relation to this case.
Yeah.
So I always wondered, like, did she just like find like a random name in the phone book or something and like go with that name? Because like there is a Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez who lives in Orlando, right?
Yeah. And I think she said, I think to police, she described Zenaida as 20 some years old, and the Zenaida that they found that lived in the area, I think she lived about a half an hour away from Orlando.
Okay.
And she was in her 40s and she had multiple children of her own.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like, I have no idea who you're talking about. And they included this woman's picture in a lineup of people to say, is this the nanny? And Casey didn't identify her. Obviously, if it was her, she would point her out.
You would know what your child's nanny looked like.
Yes. And I think, you know, I think no matter how many photos that she was shown, that she would never be able to identify the person because she literally does not. You made her up.
Yep.
She does not exist. This is not a real person.
Yeah. And this wasn't the only person Casey fabricated. She made up a number of fictional characters to embellish her story, none of which ever existed. The real Zenaida would later file a lawsuit against Casey for defamation of character.
And I don't blame her, honestly.
No. Can you imagine having your name blasted all over the news as like a child abductor?
Mm-hmm. And there was just so much coverage in this case.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's like Jane Smith or something.
Yeah.
It's a name that really, really stands out.
I think I watched an interview with the actual Zenaida, and she said like she couldn't get a job like because of her name like had been tarnished by Casey.
Yeah. And just to bring up again how you had wondered where she came up with it, and I wonder like where did she must have seen
why did you pick her?
I can imagine that she, you know, she had so much time to think about what she was going to say. She had clearly made up this fictitious person long before Kaylee had gone missing, because George says that Kaylee told him that they were going to see Zanny. They were going to see the nanny Zenaida.
Yeah.
And so you really have to wonder.
She had her details of her story planned out long, long ago. It's like she thought of every single thing that she could possibly say to somebody to lie about it.
It makes you think that she had really had this plan for a long time because she had a whole babysitter made up.
Yeah.
A whole fake person that she said was watching her child that she told all of her friends about, that she told her family about, and nobody met her.
Nobody had ever met this babysitter. So
I think Casey herself says, oh, I didn't see her, when she talks about dropping her off. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, that makes
How
no
do you
sense.
Drop your child off with someone and you don't see them?
Yeah, no.
Anyway.
Casey told police that she met Zanny through a coworker at Universal Studios named Jeff Hopkins. And Casey said that she would drop Kaylee off with Zanny while Zanny babysat Jeff's son at the same time. Turns out, Casey hadn't worked at Universal in over 2 years because she had been fired. And when she did work there, she was a person who stood behind a kiosk and sold pictures of people on the Incredible Hulk ride, not an event coordinator. Jeff Hopkins would later testify in court, saying that he never saw Casey during his time working at Universal. He never introduced her to a woman named Zanny, and Jeff didn't even have any children.
A little side note, too. So he was just a random guy that I think she went to middle school with. And so she just threw a name out, a random name, probably thinking, you know, will they check on this person? I don't know. I think she's probably thinking, if I give so many obnoxious details, that maybe they'll believe that the lie is true, because who would come up with all this bullshit if it wasn't true? But another note is the Universal job was not the only job that she made up. She also had another fake job at some sporting goods.
Oh, really?
I don't know the name of it. I guess it doesn't really matter because she didn't actually work there.
Not surprising.
And so she made up this fake job, and she would have her friend, Amy, babysit Kaylee sometimes and say that, oh, I have to go and work at this other job because I have to do inventory. Like, she would say she had to go after hours to work and count stock, when in reality she would be out partying.
Like, can you, like, just trying to put myself into Casey's shoes for a second, like, the amount of effort it takes to create that many lies and keep running with the story and try to remember all of these details about all of these lies and make sure that you're not, like, getting yourself caught up when you're talking to certain people. Mm-hmm. Like, you're literally living such a double life. Like, the amount of effort that that takes,
it's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
It must have been exhausting.
It's just, well, to her, it seems like she's just able to do it so effortlessly, which is creepy as fuck to me.
Yeah, it is. It's weird.
Yeah.
And you can just tell. I don't know. I mean, I can't explain the psychology of it, but you can tell it is just second nature to her. And that's just what she does.
She's a pathological liar.
And she lies about shit that doesn't matter. She lies about shit that matters. And it's like, how can anybody trust a single word that comes out of her mouth?
Yeah.
It's really, really unreal.
Yeah. So during the 31 days, Kaylee was nowhere to be seen. Casey was caught shopping on security camera footage without her daughter, partying and drinking with her DJ boyfriend, and hanging out with friends. Nobody was aware Kaylee was missing, because anytime anybody ever asked her where she was, Casey would come up with the excuse that she was with the babysitter. 4 days after Kaylee was seen, Casey was photographed at an Orlando nightclub, smiling and dancing on tabletops and participating in a hot body contest. So this is 4 days after Kaylee was seen.
And you can see pictures of this. I think at one point, getting ahead of myself here, but I think at one point, it's her lawyer tries to ask that these pictures of her partying not be included in evidence.
Oh, well, yeah, because of course people are going to look at that and be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Because she looks exactly like someone who doesn't give a shit about the fact that her daughter is missing.
And let's just play devil's advocate here for a second. If the babysitter really did steal her child, let's just pretend that's true. What are you doing? It's not true. What are you doing partying at a nightclub? And, like, she tells the investigators, like, oh, I tried to handle it in my own way. Oh, yeah. Like, you're out partying and drinking and participating in this hot body contest. And what are you doing to find your daughter? Like,
it's
she's so fucking guilty. It's not even funny. Like,
in her statement to police, her initial statement, she says, I can't remember exactly what it is, but something along the lines of, I did my own investigating, like going to popular bars and restaurants.
Like
what? Come on.
No one does that.
To be an idiot to think that sounds like something somebody would do.
Yeah.
Yep. Something a mother would do if their child was missing. Ugh, I just really thought that Zenaida might have Kaylee.
Yeah.
At a nightclub.
Like, you really want to find your daughter. Yeah. 2 weeks after Kaylee was last seen, Casey gets a tattoo that reads Bella Vita, which is Italian for beautiful life. And so her DJ boyfriend that she was dating at the time, what was his name? Tony Lazzaro?
Yes.
So Lazzaro is an Italian name.
Okay.
So my theory here is that she just wanted to spend her life with partying with her Italian boyfriend. He's a DJ. He probably has access to a bunch of drugs, you know, always partying. Mm-hmm. Kaylee got in the way of that. So, and I actually think, I don't know if it was you who told me this or maybe it was on one of the interviews that I was watching, but in court, Tony testifies saying that he was actually getting ready to break up with Casey. And he told Casey something along the lines of, like, I would never date a girl who had a daughter or something like that.
Yes, totally. I remember hearing that. I don't know if I told you it.
Yeah.
But I also
I think it was on one of the documentaries.
He told Casey straight up that he didn't ever want to have kids.
Right.
And that he wasn't interested in being with someone with a child.
Yeah. And he said that, like, he feels guilty for ever saying that to her because, like, he thinks that's what was the cause of everything. She went and she killed her daughter so that she could be with him. And then 2 weeks later goes out and gets this Italian Bella Vita tattoo.
Oh, like, my life is so beautiful.
Yeah.
My daughter is
beautiful life. Yeah. My daughter just got stolen from me. And
I think she even tries to explain her way out of that tattoo, saying something like, life is painful but also beautiful or something.
Oh, yeah, it's like, just give it up.
Utter bullshit.
If my kid ever went missing, I would be fucking hysterical. Like, day I would night, not I, be okay.
I wouldn't sleep.
No. I would be at the, like, at the cop's door at the police department every fucking day being like, you guys better get everybody on your crew out looking for my child or I'm going to do it myself. I'd be like screaming my kid's name so loud, having it plastered everywhere. Mm-hmm. And she's doing none of that.
I would hire private investigators.
Yeah.
I would literally have it all over social media. I would not sleep. I would not rest. Not sleep.
No.
My entire life would revolve around finding my child.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't stop until they were found.
This behavior is just so, so bizarre.
It's not normal.
It's definitely not normal. And I think anybody can see that. But it's just really, really, it's upsetting when you go through everything that she did in the time that she was missing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she tries to explain it away as that was her way of doing research. Oh, you were in a bar, like, competing against other women to see whose bodies were hotter. You were drinking. You were... The pictures of her. She's having the time of her life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And dancing and drinking. And it's just... It's disgusting.
So we'll get into that a little bit in the next episode. But when she was at the Orlando nightclub, it's already assumed that Kaylee was dead and her body had been dumped. So she's clearly out celebrating the fact that, yay, like, she's finally gone. I finally took out the trash.
Yeah, and I can live my life. It's I can sick. Do what I want now. And I it's don't sick. Have to worry about my boyfriend leaving me because now she's gone.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, she's telling her friends that she's at the nannies. She's telling her parents that she's at the nannies. And she's just trying to keep it up for as long as she can until somebody realizes that there's something wrong.
Yeah. And during the rest of that month, Casey went out to party at nightclubs multiple other times before finally confessing that the babysitter had kidnapped her daughter a month ago.
Yeah, only when her mom actually had to message her friend Amy that she lived with and get her to go up to the apartment with her. She got Amy to knock on the door and she hid to the side in order to get Casey to open the door. Wow. And then she kind of jumped out and was like, you can't do anything now.
You found
now.
Me. Yeah,
you She's found like, me. Like, you can't, like, you're cornered now. And the fact that that's what her mother had to do to get to her is so messed up.
I know.
And thank God for her friend Amy, who's, like, also was worried about the well-being of Kaylee.
Because, her friends also hadn't seen Kaylee either and had also been fed the same babysitter story.
Yes.
So at this point, people are like, okay, like, something, like, what is going on? Like, where is your child? Why are you acting so nonchalant about this? Mm-hmm. So when talking to investigators, Casey claimed that the day Kaylee went missing started like any other normal day. She dropped Kaylee off at Zanny's apartment and went to work. And keep in mind that Casey doesn't even have a job right now. So what is she doing during all of this time that she's telling people that Kaylee is with the babysitter?
This is what I thought about too. How many shifts did she, shifts, did she have at not one but two fake jobs?
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to say that for when she was working night shift or if she had an event to plan overnight, she was clearly partying. But, like, what was she doing in the middle of the day when she had a shift? Like, oh, I'm just working 9 to 5.
Yeah, like, where are you going?
And she didn't have any money. So, like, what was she doing? It wasn't like she was going and shopping, and I don't know. It just boggles my mind.
I think she was with her boyfriend a lot of the time, but I think she even told her boyfriend sometimes that, like, or did her boyfriend know about the lie? About, like, the jobs and stuff?
Not that I know of.
Okay, so that she was just telling her parents that, right?
Yeah, I think that her friends and her family thought that she had both of these jobs.
Okay.
I know for certain that her friends did because she would have her friends babysit.
Right.
When she would go into the jobs. There was a story, too, about George showing up at this sports store.
Yeah.
To surprise her to go out for lunch. And he goes up and he asks for Casey. And they're like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? It's unbelievable. And I think when she was confronted about it, she's like, it's none of your business.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah. You know, as a parent... From the other side of it, as a parent, what would I do if my child was making up jobs? I don't think I would just let it go.
No, it would like I'd be shook. I'd be like, what do you mean you don't work this job? Why have you been lying this entire time? Like, yeah. What are you trying to hide?
There is definitely a certain level of enabling that I would say happened throughout her entire life. Not just, you know, it wasn't like all of a sudden she started lying.
Mm-hmm. She got away with so much.
And they just let her lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So back to the day that Kaylee apparently went missing. Casey said that after she got off work, she went to Zanny's to pick up Kaylee, but there was no answer when she knocked at the door. So she tried calling Zanny's phone, which was out of service. And this is the story that she's giving police. Police asked Casey why she didn't notify police right away, to which she replied, quote, part of me was naive enough to think I could handle this on my own, unquote. Like, who doesn't notify police when your child goes missing? Like, hello?
It does, yeah. Somebody who was the reason for their child being missing is the person who doesn't call the police.
It's so glaringly obvious.
There's no,
there's no other explanation.
I think, you know, in the podcast, we'll try to be as neutral as possible. This is not the time to be neutral. It's impossible to be neutral.
Can you believe there's other, like, there's actual people out there who think that she didn't do it? She didn't kill her daughter?
And if you actually think that she didn't, I would love to hear your reasoning.
What's your logic?
Like, let's have a chat.
You're like, please explain everything.
Her own parents think she did it.
Yeah. There's always somebody out there who has to just go against the grain, right?
Oh, they have to play devil's advocate. Yeah. They have to say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Literally, she is the devil. So you're advocating for the devil when you try and say that it was somebody else who did this.
Yeah. It's clearly she's guilty as fuck. There's no other explanation. So this leads officers to having Casey bring them to the last place that she saw Kaylee, which reportedly was Zanny's apartment. And it had been reported by the superintendent that that apartment had been vacant for months and nobody lived there. Like, can you imagine the police just knocking on, like, the door and being like, yeah, like, no one actually lives here. And Casey's just standing there with her arms crossed, like, la la la.
And do you think she just haphazardly just picked a random apartment?
I don't know.
Like, she just pointed to a random ass door and was like, that's the one.
She probably sat, like, I feel like she would be the type of person to sit up late at night and map out all the details to the story just so she didn't get caught.
Oh, she probably did. Like,
that same day, officers bring Casey to Universal Studios, her supposed place of employment, to see if they can find anything that would aid in Kaylee's discovery. Without hesitation, Casey agrees. She leads the officers through a maze of hallways, waving and smiling at other employees as she walks past, and finally stops at a dead end of a hallway, throws her hands up in the air, smiles, and says, I don't actually work here.
It's unreal. And do you know what? The police were on to her about the job.
Yeah, they knew that she didn't work there, but they wanted to set her up to see her reaction.
And to see how far she would take
it. And she literally led them through this maze. Like if that was me, I'd be like, no, like trying to get out of it. But she really went on with it. And that's what she did this whole story is she drug out her lies literally until the bitter end.
There's an entrance to Universal just for staff. And they showed up to the security and she said her name all casual, said she forgot her badge. And the guy's like, you're not in the system. And he's like, who's your supervisor? And she says a random name. He's like, that person doesn't work here either. And then I think it just got to the point where the police just were like, okay.
Yeah, either the police
were like, let us in, or the security guard was like, okay, the police are here. I'm just going to let you in.
Yeah.
And she was like walking in offices, like you said.
So casual.
Waving at people. Like that is so embarrassing.
Yeah.
That's how far, like she just thought the police would be like, oh, she's waving to people.
And people were looking at her being like, who is this? Like, who is this girl waving to me? And she was just pretending like she knew everyone. And Yeah, so embarrassing.
Okay, you caught me. I don't work here.
Yeah.
You've backed me into a corner, literally.
Yeah.
They ended up in a dead end in a building.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, you got me. I don't work here.
Like, can you imagine what the police were thinking at that time?
It's just another example of she will keep the lie up until she cannot keep it up anymore.
Mm-hmm. So that same day, police took a cadaver dog to Casey's car, and the dog did, in fact, alert to the scent of human decomposition coming from the trunk.
Yeah, so I think the dog jumped into the car at first, into the back seat, and was trying to get into the trunk through the back seat.
Okay.
And then they closed the doors, and he circled the car a couple times, alerted to the trunk again, and then tried to jump into the trunk.
Mm-hmm. And I've always thought cadaver dogs were like super interesting and really cool.
It is cool.
And like, I didn't realize how much stronger a dog's nose is than to ours. Like, I think they said it's like 400 times stronger or something like that. We were actually watching a documentary on like the forensic evidence in this case and had some forensic analysis on it. And they were talking about the cadaver dogs and how specific they are to certain scents. So they were bringing up, like, could a dog differentiate a dead human body from like a dead animal? Or could a dog differentiate rotting garbage from the scent of a dead animal? And they were like 100% without a question, they can differentiate super easily. Like, they say that the cadaver dogs are more reliable than other tools that the police have access to.
Right.
So,
and yeah, I think they even did a little experiment and they brought a cadaver dog to a junkyard and they had human remains, animal remains, and trash, and put them in various cars in the junkyard.
Yeah.
And the dog immediately went directly to the car with the human remains in it.
Yeah. And the human remains, it was like skeletal remains at that point. There was no like flesh or anything left, and the dog was still able to pick up on the scent that quickly.
And I'm pretty sure it was in a cooler in a trunk.
Right. Yeah.
It's amazing.
So they still knew that it was human decomposition. So without a question, the dogs are super, super reliable, but we'll get more into that during like the trial section.
Yes. On July 16th, 2008, the day after the 911 calls were made by Cindy, Casey was arrested and charged with child neglect, providing false official statements, and obstructing an investigation. She appears in court the next day, where the judge denies her bond due to the fact that she demonstrated a, quote, woeful disregard for the welfare of her child, end quote. She is held in the county jail. At this point, she hasn't been charged in Kaylee's disappearance yet, but it's pretty clear that law enforcement believe that she was involved.
Yeah, they're onto her.
So that's why she was denied bond, because I think normally, I guess I don't really know in cases of child neglect, but I would say probably there would be a bond posted if there wasn't a murder involved.
Yeah.
So the same day, Casey's car is searched and many items are taken in for evidence. They included hair, dirt, and a carpet sample, which was described as questionable by investigators. On July 22nd, there's a bond hearing for Casey, where Judge Stan Strickland is clearly disturbed by the evidence. He essentially scolds Casey for her actions, or lack thereof, and sets bond at $500,000. So I would say, I don't know too much about bonds, but I would say $500,000 is a pretty large sum of money.
They didn't want her getting
out. And he probably assumed
they put it high so that she wouldn't get out.
Yes. Nobody's going to have this much money to get her out.
Yeah.
So 2 days later, Casey's lawyer, Jose Baez, files a writ of habeas corpus requesting that Casey be released from jail in order to help in the search for Kaylee. Which is just so ridiculous. Oh, all of a sudden she wants to help find her?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Now that she's in jail?
Yeah, a month later.
That makes sense.
So stupid.
Obviously, the judge denies this. He can smell the BS. Additionally, about a week later, her lawyer attempts to file a motion which prevents the release of any further audio or video recordings of Casey's conversations with her family from jail. This motion is also denied by the judge. So I think that they were being made public. After they were made public, people were just outraged at the way she was acting, because they can just tell that she's acting like someone who doesn't
care.
She's acting like somebody who's guilty.
Yeah.
So I won't get into too much detail on Jose Baez right now. I'll tell you, I'm not a fan.
Mm-mm.
He goes on to defend Aaron Hernandez and Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
So, like,
he's one of those lawyers that, like, if somebody hires Jose Baez, you can almost guarantee they're fucking guilty.
And I just don't get what kind of person this is. I always think about if I had become a lawyer, not that it was something that I wanted to do, but...
So I actually did want to.
Did you?
I did,
and did you think about the fact that you might have to defend somebody who's guilty? A guilty criminal?
Yeah. I don't think it would sit well in my conscience, like... Depending on what the case was, like, but something like this where it's like a child is missing and dead, like, how do you sleep at night?
I have no idea. Like, and I really wonder, just getting into the real deep details, I wonder if she did tell him, because he can't, it's attorney-client privilege, right? He can't tell anyone if she did admit to killing her.
I don't know.
Because he wrote a book about it.
Did he?
And he still claims that she was innocent, and he's still going with that same story.
Judging by how Casey just continues the lies, I honestly don't believe that she would have told him.
I know. I think he honestly had to say at one point to her, she kept even telling him, the nanny,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, Casey,
that story is not going
to
go. Like,
you have to stop it with the nanny.
Yeah.
Do not bring her name up again. This is not going to work.
Yeah, we got to come up with something different here.
And yeah, so I just... To get back to the point, like, what kind of person does it take to be a defense lawyer in these cases where all signs point to guilt?
You can't have a conscience.
You can't.
It's like money is more important than morals and what's right.
There's even some rumors about her sleeping with him.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
And, like, sexual favors.
And, like, that, I think that's actually confirmed.
I think so.
I think there was, like, an employee that worked in the same office as Baez, and she walked in on them having sex in his office or something.
Yeah, and I think confronted her and said,
you know, like, isn't that illegal? Like, you can't have sex with your client.
I would say that it's illegal.
Like...
But I think somebody had a conversation with her, like, this is alleged, but the person said, you know, you don't have to do these things. But I honestly don't even think that...
I think she wanted to.
I know. And I think that there's a rumor that she was in love with him, which, God, we've gotten in way too deep. But, man,
just
this
to,
guy...
Yeah, just to give you, like... visual of who this guy is. He's a grease bag.
Just the look of him.
He even looks like one, yeah.
He just, the way he talks and acts, it's just like, it doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, he's super arrogant. He's got this, like, sly demeanor and, yeah, just.
Mm-hmm. So on August 9th, 2008, Kaylee would have celebrated her third birthday. Casey's bond is officially posted on August 20th. The $500,000 bond that I mentioned before, and a bounty hunter by the name of Leonard Padilla pays the bond. And it's said that he was kind of hoping that Casey would lead him to Kaylee.
Like, who is this guy?
There is a theory that he did this for publicity. Apparently, he was really trying to make a name of himself and to kind of rival with Dog the Bounty Hunter, which you just can't. But anyway, I think he did go on to have some cameos in TV shows after this.
Oh, well, I guess he got his money's worth then.
But yeah, I think he was hoping, like,
$500,000.
If I pay
bail out Casey.
Yeah, if I pay her bond, she's going to lead me to Kaylee, and then I'm definitely going to be famous for it.
Like, did he not realize that she didn't want her daughter to be found?
I don't know. Like, probably not. I don't know the guy well enough. I haven't heard about him.
No, I've never heard that name before in my life. So
I mean, apparently he has some appearances on some show. I'm trying to think of the name of it, but anyway, so just 10 days later, after Leonard Padilla, or Padilla, I don't know how it's pronounced, after he pays the bond, it's revoked. So before I continue this, I'm wondering what happens when a bond is revoked. Did he get the money back, or does the government just keep the money?
I don't know. That's
it's not that question. Important, but I was wondering.
I would think if it's $500,000, he would probably get it back.
Right.
But I really don't know.
Yeah. Just food for thought. If anybody knows, let us know.
Yeah.
So Casey's arrested a second time. This time for stealing and cashing checks from her friend Amy. This is her best friend, the one that she was living with at the time prior to her arrest, which is just like the lowest of the low.
Like, she's such a snake.
Like, you're stealing from, she stole from her friend Amy. She was writing checks from her grandmother. I forget how much money it was alleged that she stole from her parents, but it was thousands and thousands.
Well, she didn't have a job, so this is how she got money, was stealing from people.
It's unreal. By the end of September, Casey ends up being re-released and re-arrested again. At this point, she's back in jail. She's been charged with a felony count of child neglect, multiple counts of lying to investigators, obstructing an investigation, fraudulent use of personal information, petty theft, and the use of a forged check. Like, there's just so much to keep up with here, and it's just all signs point to this person as a liar, a thief, can't be trusted. Anyway, just because somebody's a liar doesn't mean they're a murderer. Just as a side note, I know we know this to be true, but...
Yeah, there's too many things stacking up against you here.
Way too many.
Yeah.
So, on October 1st, Casey's status goes from person of interest to suspect in the disappearance of her daughter, Kaylee. Then, finally, mid-October, Casey is charged with first-degree murder, aggravated child abuse, aggravated manslaughter, and four counts of lying to investigators. As Casey is held in jail, the mass searches for Kaylee continue. People search on foot, use ATVs, boats, sonar equipment, and divers.
This was huge in Florida.
Like, massive.
Yeah, like, and I feel like anytime a child goes missing, it's like people really, really, like, they're very bothered by that. But yeah, I think, and also I know it's different in certain states, but I know certain states' trials are televised. And the Casey Anthony trial was one that you could actually watch. But,
right.
But you know how some trials you can't see anything. Yeah. They do those stupid drawings. So, yeah, everybody, like, it was all over the media. They were painting Casey out to be this horrible mother who didn't care, which she was. But, yeah, it was like, people lived and breathed this case on a daily basis.
Right. And when it's a child involved, like, there's just so much outrage. And for good reason.
Yeah.
It's just an innocent little being that had no control over their fate, essentially. So while the search continues, protesters continue to stand outside the Anthony home, harassing the family. They're holding up signs, like things like baby killer, and gosh, I don't know how to feel about it, because I know people were passionate about it, but it's just not like that's not going to get anywhere.
It's not the parents' fault. No. Like, it's not Cindy and George's fault.
And even, you know, even while Casey was in the house, when there were those short periods where she was out of jail, it's just like, I don't know what that is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah. Like, stand outside the lawmaker's place, not like the family home. That's
the people standing outside the courtrooms and stuff and waiting for the verdict and all that stuff. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
People were invested. But yeah, I do feel for, not for Casey, but I feel for Cindy and George in the sense that
I would be like afraid to leave my house and do anything.
Yeah, and they had no privacy. And anytime they went to go outside or do anything, they would have been harassed.
Yeah,
and
it's a sin. Their lives were like ruined by this.
So at one point, the protests eventually got so bad and the harassment got so bad that there was an emergency order put in place for a curfew in the Anthony's neighborhood by the Orange County Sheriff's Office.
So what does that mean? Like, the protesters had to leave at a certain
time? So when they put the curfew in, it made it so that, I don't know what time it was, but let's say it was 8 p.m. If there were people outside the home at 8 p.m., they would have gotten arrested.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think otherwise, I don't think they were actually on their property, so there was nothing legally they could do about it.
Mm.
So I think this curfew was put in so that at least the Anthonys could have some peace at nighttime.
Yeah.
On November 13th, 2008, divers conducting a search for Kaylee find a bag of bones in a river and are questioning whether the remains might be Kaylee. So this is all over the news, and I think everyone's mind sort of jumped to, it's her.
Mm-hmm.
And Casey's cellmate at the time, Robin Adams, sees this on the news.
So Casey is in jail at this point.
She's in jail.
She's in custody. Yeah.
So okay. She's in jail at this point, and she's been charged with a bunch of stuff. She's been charged with manslaughter and murder and
child neglect and everything. Yeah.
So she's in jail, and her cellmate, Robin, she sees it on the news, and she tracks Casey down, and she's kind of telling her, I think she's also thinking what everyone else was thinking, oh God, they found her, she's dead.
Yeah.
And at the time, Casey's cellmate and her were really close, like they were good friends.
Yeah.
And so she says this to Casey, they found a bag of bones in a river, small bones, they think it might be Kaylee. And without hesitation, Casey responds, quote, that's not my daughter. They're just not looking in the right place. That's not her. End quote. Casey's correctional officer also recalls this conversation and alleges that Casey says something along the lines of, quote, they aren't going to find the body. They aren't looking in the right place. End quote. And it's like, who says this?
If you thought that that could potentially be your child, would you not be beside yourself?
Which you would. So I think, in my very humble opinion, the only person that would say this is somebody who knows where the body is.
Yeah. Yep.
And how would you know where the body was if you were responsible?
Mm-hmm.
Because if my child is missing and I genuinely don't know where they are and they find some small bones in the area,
I'm going to lose
my mind until somebody shows me that it's not them.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, she says, no, they're not looking in the right spot. That's not her.
Yeah.
That's really messed up.
It's just telling.
Just a few weeks later, on December 11th, 2008, this would have been about 5 months since search efforts had begun and 6 months after Kaylee's actual disappearance. The remains of a small child are found wrapped in a blanket inside a canvas laundry bag less than a quarter mile. So this would have been less than a half of a kilometer for our Canadian listeners from the Anthony residence. When this information is released to the public, Casey is purposely brought into a room within the jail and is shown the news footage. It's recorded in hopes that Casey's reaction might be telling or that it might provoke a confession. On the recording, as it's revealed that a child's remains have been found in a swamp near the Anthony home, you can see Casey start to rock back and forth. She grabs her midsection, kind of puts her hand over her stomach, and she doubles over in her chair a couple of times. She eventually needed to be taken to medical because she was having a panic attack. Her correctional officer described her reaction not as that of a grieving mother, but of someone who had just been caught. Mm-hmm. So the body was not officially identified as Kaylee until approximately 1 week after it was discovered. So when this was on the news,
can you imagine how she felt during that week? Like, she's like, they found her. They're gonna find out that it's her. Yep. And she's got like a whole week to stew over that, mm-hmm. and probably like start going crazy in her mind and having all these like panic attacks and stuff. Like, and she knows she's caught.
Yeah. So think about the difference between those remains that were found that weren't Kaylee,
mm-hmm.
and the actual remains of Kaylee that were found, and how she had zero reaction the first time,
mm-hmm.
and the second time she's losing her mind. It's because she fucking knew.
Yeah.
If you don't know the difference, mm-hmm. if my child is missing, anytime they found remains, my same reaction would be, please, 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 God, let this not be my child.
Right.
And she, the first time, was like, nope, that's not her. Second time, she's losing it, not because she's upset that it's Kaylee,
but she's because upset she doesn't that know she's going to get caught.
She doesn't know that it's Kaylee at the time. Nobody knows, right? Just like with the first finding. But
She knows, but nobody else knows.
Right. So that's the point. It's just like the fact that even her correctional officer saw it as, you know, this was, I'm guilty. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be caught.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know at this point, she doesn't know the outcome. She doesn't know how much DNA is there. She doesn't know if she's going to be found out or not.
Mm-hmm.
So she's thinking, okay, my life is over. This is it.
Yeah.
So after the discovery of Kaylee's body, so at this point, we know that it's Kaylee. They've sent her remains away to be identified. Casey's cellmate is interviewed by Orange County investigators. They ask her cellmate, Robin, what she knows about the discovery of the body, to which she responds, quote, only what Casey told me, end quote. Robin shares with investigators that Casey had told her that they had found Kaylee in a laundry bag wrapped in a Winnie the Pooh blanket. Notice that the first time I mentioned it, there was no mention of what kind of blanket it was.
Mm-hmm.
So that information, the type of blanket and what was on the blanket, hadn't been released to the public at that time.
It wasn't on the news and the media, nothing.
So it's really unreal to me. Robin nor her correctional officer were asked to testify in the trial, which is just shocking to me, because how can you have this piece of information that you know that Casey told her cellmate they found her in this blanket, and that wasn't known to the public at the time?
Yeah.
How is that not used as evidence of her guilt?
I don't know.
I still think about that.
Yeah, I know.
And I didn't know this until I watched, it was a special on Crave, Cellmate Secrets. And it's actually really interesting because the CO and her cellmate talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And she was never asked to testify.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy.
It's unreal. So there are clearly up to this point so many complications within the case. And the discovery of Kaylee's body is no exception. Roy Kronk, the man who found Kaylee's remains, he was a meter reader whose route was in the area of the Anthony's neighborhood. He was working the day of December 11th and went into the woods to do his business when he noticed a suspicious canvas bag and called it into police. So although this seems pretty straightforward, Kronk had actually called about those exact same suspicious remains 4 months earlier, in August of 2008. He called not once, but several times over the course of a few days, and the police didn't find anything. Deputies even met him at the scene at one point. This would have been in August, so 2 months after she went missing. And he says that they didn't take his report seriously and they didn't even investigate further by actually going into the woods.
That's unbelievable to me.
It's so hard not to imagine how different the case might have turned out if they had found her body 2 months after she had passed, as opposed to in December.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a big difference.
Yeah. Just with the DNA that would have been there. Like, I don't know how quickly a body decomposes, but I would think that there would be something left, right? Like, they couldn't determine the cause of death with Kaylee because in December when she was found, she was just bones.
Right.
So, yeah.
Would it, I mean, I know decomposition happens pretty quickly, but like you said, in terms of DNA, there was literally nothing.
Yeah.
That they could bring forward with this case, and how different would it have been?
And just, like, the fact that the cops just brushed it off, like, that makes me so angry. When I hear these cases that the cops just fumble everything.
It's unreal. And don't
do a proper investigation.
Like, if there's a child missing.
I'm like, what is the point of you even being in this career if you're not going to do your fucking job?
In some of these documentaries, you can see it wasn't that far off the road.
Off the road, yeah.
I think at that time, there was more foliage. There were more trees.
Yeah.
But to not even walk into the woods.
It was like kind of down. It was kind of down like a ditch. You have to go down a ditch off like the curb of the road. And then like it's kind of like a swampy area that you have to start to walk into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was a lot of leaves and brush and that sort of thing. So like I understand how it would be an inconvenience for a police officer to have to do that and slide down this like treacherous hill. But if somebody's telling you that they see something suspicious and you know that there's a missing 3-year-old and you just turn your back on that because what, you don't want to get your shoes dirty.
Right. And I also wonder how terrible could it have been to get to that spot if Buddy was just going to pee there.
Right.
Like it's not like he went off-roading into the mud, like rolling around in the mud to go pee.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it just seems like maybe they were like, okay, buddy, you called this in before. There's nothing here.
Yeah. And just leave us alone. Brushed him off.
Yeah. Like we're not, there's nothing here.
Can you imagine being that cop now and knowing like, oh, like, wow, there actually were child remains there that I didn't bother to look at.
Yeah.
Like you should be fired.
I know. And I would assume that if he was the kind of person, he or she was the kind of person to not go and at least investigate when you found out that there was a 2-year-old that went missing a month ago, and you don't even go in and look, you probably don't care.
Yeah.
It's just unreal. That's my assumption anyway. On January 23rd, 2009, George Anthony is rushed to hospital after a suicide attempt. He had sent multiple suicidal text messages to family members. George was eventually tracked down in a rundown hotel room. he was under the influence of alcohol and medication and had a 5-paged handwritten suicide note. I won't read the note in full, but you can find it online if you're interested. I'll read a couple of quotes that stood out to me. Quote, "I have decided to leave the earth because I need to be with Kaylee Marie. I cannot keep on going because it should be me that is gone from this earth, not her." End quote. Quote, "She was so close to home. Why was she there? Who placed her there? Why is she gone? I want this to go away for Casey. What happened? Why could she not come to us? Especially you. Why not Lee? Who is involved with this stuff for Kaylee? I'm going crazy because I want to go after these people that Casey hung out with prior to Kaylee being gone." End quote. So this note was written to his wife, Cindy, Casey's mom. And to me, this just seems like a grieving grandfather who's also worried about the well-being of his daughter, who is now going to be on trial for a murder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's just feeling like, I have no control, and Kaylee was his life.
Mm-hmm. I feel and so bad for George for this whole thing.
Like, I know, and we'll get into that a little bit when we talk about the trial. In the full suicide note, there's nothing in the note that points to him being involved at all. And you can just tell that he is just so depressed, and he just feels like he doesn't want to move on now that Kaylee's gone.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to go and be with her.
Yeah, it's so sad.
So July 15th, 2009 marked 1 year since Kaylee was reported missing. And Kaylee would have celebrated her 4th and 5th birthdays on August 9th, 2009 and 2010.
So we're going to stop it there for part one. Make sure you tune into part two, where we will get deep into the trial, evidence presented, and the shocking verdict that concludes this case. If you like this podcast, make sure you subscribe and take a minute to give us a rating in the podcast app, share it with your friends, and help spread the word to all your true crime lovers. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. See you next time.